the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, Kevin Nagandi with you. And we finally made it, guys. In a year of the opt-out and COVID and canceled games, we finish up with something we're all too familiar with, and that is dominance from the well-oiled machine, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Nick Saban winning his seventh national championship. I want to get all your thoughts on the game, how it developed, and what you guys saw, the takeaways, as well as big picture things. I do want to say this, though. What stood out to me more than anything was after the game was over, Nick Saban's face after winning his seventh national championship, there was pure elation there. And then he's on Landon Dickerson's shoulders, gets carried off the field. And it was just something completely, I think, refreshing, because Saban can come off a little bit like too businesslike. And I know we've seen the smiles after games, but man, it was really good to see afterwards that build up and you could finally let a breath out. Herbie, I want to just get your thoughts on the whole big picture of what you saw and then how things played out.
Clinic. It was a clinic, offensive clinic, which we kind of knew coming in that Sark and Mac Jones and all those weapons were going to be really challenging for the Ohio State, especially pass defense, to match up. And that part played out. My whole thing was, if Ohio State's going to give up a ton of yards, is Alabama going to score touchdowns in the red zone? And they obviously did that. And I think people forget, I mean, early in the game, it played out the way I know David had predicted and I predicted. I think a lot of people thought it would, like, both teams in the mid-40s. And, I mean, it's 14-14. Bama scores another one. You know, it's 21-14. Ohio State goes 9 plays, I think 69 yards. They're about to make it 21-21. They end up settling for a short field goal. But, I mean, it's going back and forth, you know. And then Bama just kept going, and then to Pete Golding and Nick Saban and the defense, from Alabama's credit, they got a couple three and outs, and that's when you got that Alabama offense, you get a couple three and outs, you get Ohio State to punt, and
ball game.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's like it's like a race. You give a guy a 20-30 meter head start in a 100 meter race, and you're gonna lose. And if you can't keep pace with them, it's game, set, match. And so the best team in the country ended up winning the national title. And for me, David, I just getting close to this team over the last month or so, the personality of the team, you had Najee Harris come back. He could have gone out early. You had Devontae Smith come back. He could have gone out early. Both those guys, probably early second rounders a year ago. Leatherwood came back. Mac Jones, Landon Dickerson. I mean, this team was in lock and load mode on getting to the national championship and winning it. And God, you just want to hug every one of them for that attitude, because I think that permeated throughout the entire roster. This team was driven, focused on winning. All the individual accolades came, but as you know, David, they there's something really refreshing about a team that doesn't care about anything other than holding up a trophy at the end of the season, and they were able to accomplish it.
It's special. It's unique. It's refreshing. By the way, with all the opt-outs / whatever you want to call it, quitting, all the stuff that goes on in the sport, all the negativity in the sport, it was refreshing to see all those guys come back, to see a lot of positivity. Nick Saban, I thought, said something that was really key a couple weeks ago. He said, you know, it makes it really easy when your best players are your best people, are great people. And great leaders. Like, it makes his job very, very easy. When all your big stars are not me guys, it makes life easy as a coach. And these guys put team above me, and that's the way it works. It's been very successful. Just to think and to put into context how historically good this offense was, we shouldn't have called it the Home Depot Awards. We should have called it the Alabama Awards, because they won every offensive award besides the Mackey. Think about that, guys. Like, Doak Walker, check. Outland, check. Remington, check. Davey O'Brien, check. Biletnikoff, check. Like, it's just stupid. Like, that's silly, bro. That's not normal in any way, shape, or form. So it's an offense that And again, coming off of LSU a year ago, Kirk, I was like, dude, best offense by far I've ever seen. And now I don't know. And think about it. Landon Dickerson didn't play. Jalen Waddle was limping around. He did play, though, because they couldn't have won a national title without him.
Oh,
he's out there limping around.
You're giving all these accolades. I want to give you the floor to apologize to Nick Saban and Alex.
I was right. They didn't win without him. He was out there, Kirk. I was right. I mean, come on. What are you talking about,
you're
bro?
You're beautiful.
But I am a beaut. Thank you. But no, it is. It's amazing because when I watched them early in the year, and y'all did too, obviously, but just the stacks and the type of offense they ran with Waddle and how good he is and how explosive he is. How do you just go, okay, you know what? We'll just make it about six. You know, it was about 17 and six, but you know, now we'll just kind of switch gears and make it about six. I mean, just, and we've marveled at Sarkisian all year long, but I mean, the dude's on point. It's ridiculous. I mean, he had him playing so well and had so many answers and did such a good job of manufacturing off. It's just, it's a clinic. It's a clinic take we could go through and break down that was unbelievable.
Kevin, I just want to add one thing about Devontae Smith. And you mentioned all those awards. And I think they're a great example and lesson for any coach that's listening, any college football player that's listening, that, again, because of the way they're raised in this generation, it's easy to get caught up and I got to get mine. And especially at the skill positions. And if you ever need an example on, you got to reverse when you think you got to get yours. Because nobody cares if you're a great player and your team is 5-6. Everybody cares when you're 8-0 or 9-0 or 10-0. That's how you get individual attention. America, College Game Day, all the reporters, all the attention, Sports Center's focus is not on the 2-8 team with a great receiver. No one cares about that receiver. But if you're winning, all of a sudden you care about those individuals. So sometimes I think the players of today, they get so caught up in what they're doing. Alabama is a great example of focusing on winning a game, the 1 week at a time, and winning a championship. And then all that individual success on the back end will come. And Devontae Smith could not be a better example. Again, with wide receivers that get so caught up in the trash talking aspect and what I'm getting. I mean, what we just said it earlier, but what a breath of fresh air he is to the game. I mean, even in the national championship, dude is out there doing things in a half that the sport has never seen. And you would have thought watching him in his body language, he didn't have a catch. I mean, here's the Heisman Trophy winner with like over 200 yards and a half. And he's just out there ho-humming it, just flipping the ball to the ref, blocking, being the gunner on the punt team. Who was the last time you ever heard of a Heisman Trophy winning receiver that's not just returning punts or kickoffs? He's a gunner. He's running down. I mean, it's like the epitome of a selfless approach. And even after the game, so humble, so appreciative. I mean, that guy is a once in a lifetime. And they've had some freaks that have gone through there. But because of his approach, along with what he can do on the field, obviously, he ends up hurting. He breaks a finger or his hand. They're talking about him maybe needing to go to a surgery immediately. Like they have to leave the stadium. This dude's like, can I go back out in the field? He's wanting to, he was in a tent for 20 minutes. He's trying to debate with Jeff Allen and the trainers. Like, let me get back out there, man. I got to finish this game. And then, you know, and then he comes back and he wants to be out there with his boys. I mean, just everything, you can't say enough good things about Devontae Smith and about his approach and just so happy. Think about it. Devontae Smith had to wait his turn. He had a big year last year, but it was about Judy and Ruggs. Same thing about Najee Harris. He comes in 5-star, a little bit impatient, a little frustrated. Bo Scarborough's there. He had to wait behind him in 17. You had Josh Jacobs. You had Damian Harris. That's the deal at Alabama. You got to wait your turn. And he had to learn that lesson. And then he's rewarded on the back end for that. And then the quarterback, Mac Jones, he gets in there the same year Tua comes in. Alabama fans don't even know he's on the roster for 3 years. I mean, they're already talking about the next quarterback, Bryce Young, coming in out of California. Thank God we got him coming in for Tua. that's Alabama fans, let alone the country. So all three of their alphas, the guys that were making all the plays, how great is it? They didn't transfer. They didn't go to the portal. They learned valuable life lessons along the way. And they get theirs at the back end of, after showing patience and perseverance. And they're rewarded with it, not just the championship, but being leaders of one of the greatest teams that Nick Saban's had. And when I say team, that may be the best team that Saban's had since he's been in Alabama.
Back to, stressing the idea that this is the best team that Saban's had. I mean, he's got 7 titles, 6 of Bama. You can make a case. I think that it's the complete opposite of what we saw on Monday night with the offense, where it was the defense that was the stars on that 2009 team and how they dominated. But back to like the dominance of the players and the talent. Guys, that 2017 Alabama recruiting class, Tua, Judy, Ruggs, Najee, Devontae, Mac Jones, Dylan Moses, Leatherwood, Jedrick Wills, Xavier McKinney. And those are just some of the guys I'm mentioning. I'm not mentioning all of them. And it just gives you an idea that the way this team, it takes me back to the Miami days from 20 years ago, right, where it felt like practice was harder because they're playing within amongst themselves and they're policing themselves, that when it came to game time, the game was easier because who they were facing on the practice field day in and day out. Would you guys draw that same comparison in the sense of the talent on the field in practice is tougher to the point where they are dominating week in and week out in the games because they are disciplined and they're policing themselves within?
Absolutely. And you're right about Miami is a great example. I think we need to put in perspective that 17 class. My dad told me when I signed at Ohio State, and Ohio State's like Alabama or Georgia, wherever, when you sign, everybody's, you know, an All-American, high school All-American, All-State, all this, all that. Almost every guy that signs there. And I remember my dad, he coached at Ohio State, and he said, you know, you're going to be shocked. If 50% of your class ends up playing and contributing, that's a great class. And I'm like, Dad, what are you talking about? Every guy's going to play in our class. They're all 5-star, 4-star kind of guy. They're all going to play. And sure enough, you get done after 5 years, four years, whatever it is, 3 years. You go back and look at every class. If you get over 50% just that start, let alone if they're all SEC or all Big Ten, let alone if they're first rounders. I mean, it's that class is one of the best I've ever heard of. And by the way, when they beat Georgia on that last drive, there were like 5 or 6 of those players on the field on that last play when Devontae Smith scored that touchdown from Tua, which is just mind-boggling to think about. But yeah, they get a better look in practice than they do in games. But yeah, I think perspective's in order to really appreciate how unique and rare that class, even by Saban standards. He signs great classes every year. No. But that best he's ever had.
It's unique. It's special. But I mean, you also got to give a tip of the cap to how he develops these kids. I mean, there's a lot of people all across the country who are getting elite recruits every single year, but Nick does a better job of developing his kids. I mean, that's just, he doesn't, and Kirk can tell you this too. He doesn't talk to his kids like they're kids. He talks to these kids like they're adults and treats them like they're adults and meets with all of them in the offseason and tells them exactly where they need to get better. And that's how you develop. It's a process of, listen, I'm here to develop you. I'm here to make you better. Am I going to ride you? Yes, I'm going to ride you. Are you going to not like me sometimes? Yes. But what's our goal? Our goal is to make you the best player we can possibly make you. Our goal is to make you the best person we can possibly make you. Not everybody buys into that, by the way. Not everybody's there for the team, guys. Newsflash. Like, some people come in and they're there for themselves. And your job as a coach is to find guys that you're going to be there for the team. Sometimes you can take guys that aren't ranked as highly, but they're very great team players. And sometimes that works out better for you than guys that are the highest rated kid in the class, but he's a turd. And there are turds, by the way. That's just going to happen. So I think it's a tribute to, yeah, he gets elite recruits, but there's a lot of people that get elite recruits. His system and the way they develop them is unique, and it's better than everybody else.
David, you'll love this. After the game, you know, by the time I got back to the hotel, it was almost 2 in the morning, and I couldn't help I had to call Coach Saban and congratulate him. So I called him thinking I might get voicemail. He picks up and I just congratulated him. I mean, I said, listen, man, seventh national championship. I know you don't get caught up in that, but just it's for all of us who cover the game, like it's truly an honor to cover you. Like we appreciate you and what you do for this sport, because it's easy to hate on greatness. You know, when you climb the mountain so many times, Dabo's learned that. Dabo went from being, oh, he's fun. Look at him over there at Clemson. All of a sudden he starts winning too much. Oh, look at Dabo. I can't stand Dabo. That's what happens when you win. And if you really look at Nick Saban objectively, how can you not appreciate not just the greatness and the recruiting and the development, but how many times did you watch Alabama trash talk Ohio State when you watched that game? They don't do it. And I even asked him on that call. I said, how do you get your team every year to be on a business trip in these games? Like, there's no finger pointing. He goes, because I don't tolerate it. I tell them when they show up and in practice, we do not talk to the opponent. That's our one rule when it comes to that. You're not allowed to talk to the opponent. And if you watch Alabama, they don't just beat you. They do it in a way that's, it's respectful, especially in today's generation. It's so refreshing to watch how they play the game. Not just the winning and the excellence of the program. But the only time I can really, there's been maybe one or two times since he's been there. I remember Yeldon, the running back, mm-hmm. They're playing at Texas A&M at Kyle Field, and they're playing against Johnny Manziel when he used to do that money sign or whatever he was doing, the sign that, you know, that people used to make fun of or talk about. And Yeldon scored a touchdown at Kyle Field, and it was the year after they upset him at Bryant Denny. And he did that sign, and then he did a throat slash. And the reaction from Nick Saban on the sideline, I don't think Yeldon went in back into the game for a while, and if he did. And I just remember that standing out that, man, this guy does not put up with any of it. And if you watch his teams, I was just curious, how do you do that? And he goes, because I just don't tolerate it. I tell him, do not. And even in practice, you're not allowed to talk. So it's just ingrained in their system. And I was like, can you give a class on that, like in the offseason, to all the coaches around the country? Because somewhere we forgot that memo. Because there's more individuality and the trash talking to the opponent. I love celebrating. I love, you know, teams having fun, like Pollock make a play. But Pollock, he might have, but I mean, usually he's celebrating with the Georgia defense. But it's so rare to
100%.
See. 100%. You know, I mean, it's just rare to see a team be so good. Like LSU. Think about how LSU handled success last year. Like, and how different. how they disrespected Clemson as they did it. Yeah, that's not the deal with Nick Saban, man. So I just want to say, as a guy who loves the game of college football, all three of us do, I salute Alabama for how they won that game and the way they always win games. There's just a certain level of class on the field that they represent the game the right way. And I wish more teams would watch another example of how they do it.
Herbie, to your point, and to Pollock's point about he treats them like men, and the best way to send a message to any star is not so much the yelling, not so much anything else, but to say, all right, you're not going to get on the field, right? That's the way you want to play, then you won't get the chance to play. And the message is sent because they have so much talent on the roster. Next man up, he steps up, and then boom, you're going to lose playing time. And I think that kind of effect, when you could do that with like a guy like Yeldon, and everybody's watching, hey, that means no one is safe from all the way to the top. So
he doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. And that carries down, right? And, yes. And you brought up one thing that you brought up the 2019 LSU team, and I'm not going to let Pollock off the hook either because he said, I don't know. But I want to start with you, Herbie. 2019 LSU versus 2020 Alabama. That is going to be heavily debated, I think, years and years in bars and conversations in the South going forward. How would you view it right now? That LSU team versus that Alabama team?
I go back to Tua last year in the LSU game. It's Burrow found a way to win. He basically outscored him. That was a great game and a great Alabama team last year. believe it or not, I think as the numbers show, the Alabama offense without Ruggs, without Judy, without Tua, was better. You know, and Sark was better with Mac Jones than he was with Tua. And it's amazing to think that. I mean, I loved Burrow, man. I loved Joe Burrow in that offense. What to me is great with both those quarterbacks, every time they took a snap, they had an answer for whatever coverage you were in. So if you tried to disguise, go pre-snap to post-snap, those quarterbacks and their ability to process and see things, and they were so well prepared with Brady and Burrow and Sark and Jones, that there's really, you're at the mercy of, you know, oh, you're going to go here? Boom, we're going there. Oh, good one. You're going there? Bang, we're going to do that. Like, they always had the chalk last, strategically and schematically. And so to me, it would be a shootout. And it'd be a debate on which defense, and LSU got better late in the year last year defensively. It would be which defense would get a stop or two. And by the way, that Alabama defense, as young as they are this year, how about, I know David had to enjoy Barmore just dominating in the inside.
Eating.
That defense next year is going to be really fun to watch. For Alabama, I think a lot of their players post game was like, we're just getting started, because a lot of the freshmen played. I think it'd be a shootout. I would say which quarterback had the ball last would win it, and I would err on the side of the class and chemistry and the development of how they came together and were on a mission for Alabama. I'd probably give Alabama, because of the intangibles, a slight edge in that game.
Well, and one has the GOAT, the best coach of all time, and one doesn't.
Right.
You know, that's a big advantage. I'll say this. I think you broke down all the positions, and I think all the skill on the field is insane. There is a big difference. There's one key difference between Mac Jones and Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow can create with his feet when he needs to. I'm not saying Mac Jones isn't creative. He is, and he does a great job of moving in the pocket. Burrow's a legit athlete that can make, like, you can cover it perfectly, and then you got that sucker back there that just, it doesn't matter. He scrambles around, and his patience for 10 seconds back in the pocket, he'll do it. So I think you're talking about crazy video game shootout. I mean, stupid shootout. Like, we're both getting 50. And Tua wasn't healthy last year either, by the way. Remember, Tua was totally jacked up. So I think it would be 50-something to 50-something, edge the GOAT, edge Joe Burrow. So maybe I give a slight edge to the offense of LSU just because of Joe Burrow's creativity.
Fascinating. And then we haven't even talked about the offensive lines, because I thought Bama's offensive line this year, even
way
with
better.
Dickerson hurt, better than LSU's line.
Way better.
Right. So
the right tackle that, I mean, Neil, he'll move to left tackle next year. He's probably a top five pick. He's 6'7", 360. If Dickerson's in there, I mean, you're talking about one of the top offensive lines that college football has seen in a long time. And those guys, left tackle, Leatherwood's probably a late first rounder. They're a tenacious group, and it really freed up Sark to play the numbers game. You know, you sit back and worry about the pass, they'll just dominate the line of scrimmage. And if you worry too much about Harris in the run game, they're going to throw it for 400 or 500 yards. So that line it often gets overlooked because all those points and the skill guys, but you guys are right about making sure we give them some love.
And that leads us to the next conversation, the big picture of 2021, and our good friend the Bear tweeting out on Monday, while this was all playing out, we've touched upon this on the podcast in the past on some concerns that we have about the same group of teams that are always in the conversation and the playoff and what it's done now. And if you look at it, the most glaring thing is Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, 21 playoff games. That trio has won 17 of the 21 games in the playoff have gone to Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. And look at the early rankings for 2021. You've got the same three. Don't sleep on the outside three, and that is Oklahoma, Georgia, as well as Iowa State, considering how many people are coming back, as well as their head coach, Matt Campbell. How do you – yeah, this feels like a loaded question, but I do want to get your thoughts. Hurry, how do you fix it? How do you fix the perception here? Because it is a concern here when you're looking at Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. And those three programs, I want to say this from the beginning, they shouldn't apologize. Because this is excellence. I mean, when Mike Tyson was dominating, he didn't apologize. When Tiger Woods was dominating, he didn't apologize. People wanted Gino Auriemma and UConn to apologize. He didn't have to. It's everybody else should get better. How do you approach this gap here from the elite teams in this top tier to everybody else here when it comes to the conversation of 2021?
I think there's just so many different areas that the leadership of the sport are going to have to evaluate. I mean, first of all, is the NCAA going to continue to be the governing body of college football, not just the Power Five, but in general? I think you need, it'd be great if you had one voice. You know, I think all the regions and the conferences need to have their say, and they need to be, their voice needs to be heard. But at the end of the day, it'd be really cool if you had one guy. I think that's one thing we learned in the global pandemic is we have a bunch of silos when it comes to leadership in the sport. And I think maybe part of that is okay, but when you get into some big decisions and legislation, you need one voice that looks over the whole country and cares about the sport, you know, from coast to coast. And I think right now, you know, and you guys maybe know all the details, but when you're around Alabama or Ohio State or Georgia or Clemson, you know, the resources, the amount of people on the staff, it's incredible, you know, and they have former head coaches as an offensive analyst. You know, they have Mike Stoops, you have Charlie Strong, you have Butch Jones, you just have unlimited resources. You know, by the time you get done week three, you're on the road, let's say Starkville, by the time you get back, all those analysts and that staff, they've already broken down Arkansas for next week. Like, you don't, in the old days, you know, you had to break film down yourself, and there are teams out there that don't have those resources. When it comes to budgets for recruiting, I just love to see everybody play from the same kind of stratosphere. And I think right now there's a haves and a have nots in big time college football. And we got to figure out a way to, if you want equality, if you want still let Alabama keep doing what they're doing, let Ohio State, let Clemson, let Georgia, let Oklahoma, you know, those same teams that we always see. I don't want to take away from what they're doing, but it'd be great if there was a way to help some of these other teams when it comes to, like, to me, everybody should have the same amount of a support staff across the board, same amount of budget across the board. It should be almost like a salary cap or revenue sharing or whatever you might have, just because right now people are playing from different sandboxes and it's almost impossible for these other teams. Occasionally you'll have an Iowa State as an outlier. They're like the Tampa Bay Rays, you know, of MLB. You can get an outlier, but it's the haves and the have-nots, and they've got to figure out a way to make it more equal if you ever want to see other teams get up there and have a fair shake at it.
I've never heard that point before, and I love it. I've never heard someone say, you know, put a budget on it. I'll say this. The one thing about that is, I would say that the top teams that we name typically have a way of working around systems better than most. You can read into that whatever you'd like. But I think, I just think it's hard. The recruiting disparity. Thank you, Barkley. Appreciate that, buddy. My dog over here just dropping bones on the hardwood right next to my face. Appreciate that, buddy. You know, I think the recruiting advantage or the recruiting is so different. The difference between, you know, those top teams that you're going to point to, and we pointed to all of them, right? You talk to talk about Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, Oklahoma. They're always in the top 10 in recruiting. Always. every single year. And I don't have to go top 10 for most of those teams every single year. So you get the best players. I'm not saying everybody can be great with great players, but it does make it a lot easier. And when you get a class full of great players, that depth you're talking about, when you talk about saving and put TJ Yeldon on the bench, you can do that because you got another freak to put in there too. So yep. I think the recruiting is so different. It's so hard to close that gap because the depth, injuries happen. It's okay. We got another one right here. Transfers happen. It's okay. We got more. And by the way, I think it's getting worse now because transfer portals, what, Trey Sermon, by the way, what about him? Okay. I'm over here. I'd rather go to Ohio State. I think that's going to continue to happen more and more. Players that are playing on really good teams are going to go, I want to go play for a championship and play on a really great team. And I have that opportunity. So how we monitor this transfer portal is going to make this, because it's getting worse and worse with the transfer yeah. portal and yep. and transfers, and now possibly lifting restrictions off of transfers, ability to capitalize on name and likeness. We're about to drive a further wedge, Kirk, between the haves and the have-nots, between the I got serious bread and you don't. So I don't think it's going away. We can expand the playoff, and I think we need to have more kids and more brands in the mix. Are they going to win it more? Probably not. But, heck, at least you got a chance, and you didn't knocked out, and the season becomes important to a lot more people. So I think that I think it's going to be extremely difficult. And I don't think there's an answer. I love what you said, but I still think those elite teams will find a way to work around that.
Yeah, I think the that's a really big concern that you have when it comes to name, image, and likeness, the transfer portal. I know from talking to a lot of people that is really at the forefront of the biggest concerns moving forward with college sports and college football. And I think it's not just because they're trying to prevent players from, you know, having an ability to go. It's about what happens if, like right now, I think there's over 1,500 kids that are in the transfer portal. What people are not writing about is there's not going to be a lot of homes for some of these players to go. So if you go onto that database, and I've never been on it, but if you look at the transfer portal, it's broken down like, oh, quarterbacks. Okay, let's see. We need a quarterback. And you stroll through there and you see all the quarterbacks that are available, or running back or defensive tackle or whatever you're looking for. It's really bizarre, you know, to think that that's what coaches are doing. The problem is they don't have there's not enough room on rosters out there. So I think what's going to come on the back end of this initial transfer portal, this is great. Kids can go wherever they want. And there are some that are going. There are also some that are not going to have anywhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
No one's talking about that. And so, well, they can just go back to the school that they just told, I'm out of here. No, that doesn't always work out. You know, you're a coach of a kid just said, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Forget this. And then he looks around and no one offers him an opportunity.
Do I really want him?
Come mm-hmm. back. So what happens when these kids don't have anywhere to go? So I think that's the next chapter in the transfer portal. And how is that handled? I think will be an interesting thing.
It's not a transfer portal. It's a quarterback transfer portal.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Like, if you think about it, there are going to be exceptions to the rule, but, you know, to guarantee success, a lot of teams can literally dip in that. Look at all the teams last year, like De'Aaron King and Miami become extremely relevant right away because they got that dude. And now if you're at a smaller school, okay, again, Kirk, we're trying to drive the difference between – we're trying to spread parity out in college football, but now De'Aaron King's balling. I'm going to go pluck him in Miami. Last year, Jamie Newman, you know, balling in Wake Forest. I'm going to go pluck him. You know, I think it's going to be hard, but the majority of the people that go on the transfer portals that are having success or that are looked at are quarterbacks. So you better be careful if you're somebody else.
Big storyline would be JT Daniels, right?
Yeah.
At Georgia. Yeah. And what we saw at Oklahoma before Spencer Rattler, right? That was a pipeline that it keeps on working. You could churn it out. As a result, you're just getting these guys. I hate the word mercenary, but you're getting these guys for 1 year, right? And then boom, then they move on.
I think the one last thing on transfer portal that my biggest concern is it goes against every value that football teaches you. Now, if you're looking at the depth chart, you're never going to play. I mean, I guess you got to look at that. I mean, if it's, you know, the coach that you went to play for, you really loved and he's gone, you know, maybe whatever the case is, you want to get back closer to home. You thought you were ready to leave and now you want to go back home. There are some things, it's up to the individual. I get that, but I'm just saying in general, if look at the Alabama, look at Mac Jones, look at Najee Harris, look at Devontae Smith. Those guys just ended up having really good years on the back end and they had to work for it and they had to be patient. And football teaches you some really challenging life lessons. And I think David and I both are from the same school of not old school, but just being older and being removed from the game as players. You look back at the game and what you really appreciate as a parent, as a citizen, as a husband, as an employee, are some of the really challenging life lessons that when I was 18 or 19 or 20, I thought they were stupid. I thought they were terrible. I was against them. What are they doing? This isn't fair. And if you're taught at those valuable, impressionable years, hey, if you don't like it, get out of here. Go somewhere else. Why not? Grass is greener over there. Don't deal with your problems. Get out. Go, go, go. Like, it goes against every fabric of the sport. Nick Saban grinding on you when you're a freshman is teaching you valuable lessons about life. And I just feel like we're opening up a door, not for all cases, but for a lot of guys. They get disgruntled. They get their feelings hurt. This didn't work out the way they told me in recruiting. This isn't fair. I'm out of here. And I just, that's my biggest fear for transfer portal, because there's so many of them. It's become almost the cool thing to do is enter the transfer portal. I'm out of here, man. And I just feel like in the big picture, 10, 20, 30 years down the road, these guys are going to miss out on opportunities to grow as people and really make an impact on their lives. So that's my take. I don't know how you guys feel about the portal.
I think you nail one big thing. Is that we're not hearing, and the combined Pollock's viewpoint of the quarterbacks, we are hearing the good stories, right? We're not hearing enough of the other stories. And that is, hey, I went into the transfer portal and then I came out without a team. And I think you're going to see more of that come out in the next couple of years, where the disappointment and the explanation of, hey, I thought that on the other side, that grass was going to be greener and it's not. And for every, you know, for every Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield story are probably 5 to 10 stories of just, hey, it did not work out for me. I couldn't find my place. And a cautionary tale to be aware of being careful of what you're asking for, because it may not be great. And I think you're going to see that probably in the next 2 years come out more and more. The one issue we're going to have is the imbalance. And like you guys have said, I think that's going to continue to play out here. As we wrap this up, guys, it's been crazy, fluid, a lot of fun at the same time. You know, a lot of appreciation of the game, especially with the players and the coaches and the programs and the people behind the programs have endured to get these games moving forward, right? And for us to be here at the finish line means a lot. Final thoughts here on reflecting on the 2020 season as we kind of seal things off and get ready for the offseason?
Just what you said, really. I mean, we've talked about it, you know, a lot about our kind of our gratitude for the sacrifice by all these players, by all these coaches. I just keep going back to what the country was like before football season started, and all the stuff that was being talked about, and then football came along and we wondered if it was a week to week thing. And, you know, it was kind of uncharted waters and is it going to make it all the way through? And there were a lot of unusual set of circumstances throughout the entire season. But the one thing that was consistent was these players, a lot of times were isolated. You know, they'd go to the facility, they'd come back to their apartment. I mean, that's not living like a college student. But they were willing to do that because they wanted to play. And so I think all the college football, the fan bases are just so appreciative of what they were able to do for us to be able to have podcasts like this and talk about games and debate issues and just talk about stuff that we love to do. And it'd be interesting to see where we are, you know, with spring ball in a few months and then get ready for August of next year, you know, with the vaccine out there, how much does it change? If it changes at all, will fans be back? Will they be back at 100%? It's a fascinating time. It's been a challenging time for all of us. But we were able to crown a champion. And I think we'll always look back at this year and remember it for, like we talked about, the perseverance by so many.
So strange, you know, but it's amazing that you kind of get used to empty stadiums and, it's just nuts that, you know, life did a good job of moving on. The sport did a good job of moving on. I'll be curious to see too, because I express all the same gratitude as you guys. I'll be just curious to see what football looks like moving forward and how much this changes our world moving forward. You know, I don't know when things will go back to quote unquote normal or if they will, and you know, how it looks and how it shakes out and what football becomes and what crowds become, but just thankful that we had an opportunity to cover it and thankful we played it. And I know the fans were, I know, people at home were, I know we were. So it was a difficult year, a year of sacrifice for a lot of people. I think the Army Navy game, you know, puts it in perspective for us too, like who's really doing a lot of the sacrificing every year, for us. But, you know, just definitely, I think the world changed in 2020, and I'm interested to see in 2021 how much it continues to shift and morph and maybe not go back to what 2020 was, but also not be what 2019 was.
Appreciate it, fellas. Enjoy the off season. Enjoy the gym. Enjoy the puppies outside, Herbie. Look forward to us getting back together later on this year and hopefully different circumstances and things in a better light in reality outside of football as well. Take care, guys.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it, dude.
Wow. I can't believe we made it, you know, in a season where I wasn't sure if we were going to have games or how long we were going to have football. And for us to be taping this on January 13th and wrapping things up with Herb Street and Pollock, a fantastic year. And when I say fantastic, it's because we finished and we could celebrate Miami and, of course, crown a champion that finished a perfect season and a season filled with a bunch of imperfections, right? I want to thank, of course, Taylor Schwenk, who's always with us, our great producer. Week in and week out, regardless of the circumstances, doing a phenomenal job with all of our guests, scheduling them, bringing them in, and making sure that we can bring you the pod at least once or twice a week during the season, maybe even three times. And I want to promise everybody here, too, that we will have another podcast next week where we wrap things up with the perspective from our insiders and our writers and their final thoughts from 2020, as well as, you know, what they're looking forward to in 2021. And we'll have more podcasts coming to you in the off season, of course, surrounding, you know, the reaction of signing day, I think building up to the draft and other college football news down the road. So stay tuned to that. Until then, we wish you safe health and wear a mask, and we'll talk to you soon.